From Storyflow.
This is your daily audio brief for July 7th.
TO July 7th.
The systems update via tech stories that bear on what's coming next.
Let's get into it.
First from latent.space.
AI news, the field guide to Fable. Farrakh had been working on a field guide to Fable blog series and happened to have a keynote plan the day of the relaunch, so he kindly pivoted the entire keynote in one night to give the most timely advice he had, which was released to date the four segments on my watch-along commentary in Italy. CS000 introduction and setting the stage for Fable 232 and Hobbling Claude. Understanding model behavior, the constraints on a model are often imposed by US the harness we put them in and the way we prompt them. While we congratulate friend of the show, General Intuition on their new model and friend of the show, Shenyu Yao on their new model, and the world awaits the release of GPT 5.6 Soul Ultra. People are racing to find the limits of Fable 5 before the subscription subsidy ends tomorrow. Case in point, most people have come to agree with Arik on the unreasonable effectiveness of HTML.
908 Finding your unknowns, navigating the gap between map and territory, a close cousin to unhobbling. If unhobbling is about clearing out outdated knowns, then this is about finding things you deep.
DN, even though you didn't know easiest techniques, telling Claude to do a blinds but pass for your unknowns, brainstorm for wildly different design directions, interview me similar to / grill me, the prioritizing high impact questions, use references, in the case of migrations, keep implementation.
Notes.nd, a running log of underspecified decisions made on your behalf, quiz me and show my understanding. 1429, dealing with grief, reflecting on the emotional shift in coding productivity, what you used to spend weeks on is now done in hours. 1630, being unreasonable, demanding good, fast, and cheap.
Results trade-offs are not real because Fable is more capable. You can be more ambitious and not accept trade-offs. Therefore, when we encounter a new class of model, we should expect to remove or change those harnesses and prompts in order to elicit new behaviors that you otherwise would never see because you are overly limiting aka hobbling the model.
Building is easy, generating value is still hard.
Overall, an excellent talk that we will be mapping out the implications of as the world acclimatizes to the first Fable class models.
Brand news for 7/04/2026, 7/06/2026.
We checked 12 subreddits, 544 Twitters, and no further Discords. Tencent Hunyuan's Hi3 release and the openweight Frontier Hi3 lands as a serious open model. Tencent released Hi3 under Apache 2.0, a 295 billion MoE with 21 billion active parameters, 1 incident NTQ experts / top 8 routing, GQA, 256,000 context, and a 3.8
billion MTP layer for speculative decoding.
AI News website lets you search all past issues.
As a reminder, AI News is now a section of latent space.
You can opt in / out of email frequencies.
Multiple posts framed it as competitive with much larger systems on reasoning, coding, and agentic tasks with particular emphasis on reliability improvements like tool calling stability and anti-hallucination work at Alibakuch, at Hugging Papers, at Shenyu Yao 12. A follow-up detailed Tencent production kernels now upstreamed into VLLM main, including load balance decode scheduling and fused FB8 MoE serving, with reported gains of up to 2.95x on mixed length decode and latency reductions of roughly 24% TTFT and 17% TPOP versus D.
Effort backends at VLLM project.
Inference support was unusually day zero mature at VLLM project,
said Hi3 runs natively in VLLM from launch with tool call and reasoning passes, MTP speculative decoding, and validated support on NVIDIA and AMD.
Broader open model context, Hi3 was immediately compared against GLM 5.2, with some posters arguing Tencent has now joined the very top tier of open source labs if the benchmark and vibe test results hold it to Autax's techs, while others still maintain GLM 5.2 as the best currently usable open weight and
Odal in practice at Tinigrad, Mbusigin. Community reaction was strong enough that Technium quickly made Hi3 free on news portal for 2 weeks.
The net takeaway, the open frontier is compressing fast, and the competition is increasingly about deployment robustness rather than just raw leaderboard deltas. Agent benchmarks, harnesses, and long-running memory automation bench AI adds a more realistic agent to Valve. Artificial Analyst launched an independent leaderboard for Zapier's automation bench, evaluating agents across 657 tasks and 40 simulated SaaS apps with both objectives and guardrails. Claude Fable 5 led at 48.6%, narrowly ahead of Opus 4.8 at 48.5%, with Gemini 3.5 Flash at 42.6% and GPT 5.5 XI at 42.1%. More interesting than the ranking, every model still breaks business rules, and Gemini looked notably strong on objective per guardrail violation and cost efficiency.
Next, second from the business engineer, the 6 Agares moats.
Every business model transition redefines what defensibility means. SaaS edits, own moat vocabulary, seat lock-in, network effects, switching costs on stored data, ecosystem depth.
Those moats
worked because SaaS sold access to tools that humans operate, and defensibility grew around human usage patterns. Agares breaks that vocabulary because Agares sells something structurally different.
IGRS Agenticus service charges for the execution of outcomes by agents, not for access to tools operated by humans.
That single reframing is the disruption.
It rewires what gets sold outcomes, not access, who does the buying business budgets, not IT budgets, where margin lies substrate, not interface, which metrics still predict the future consumption, not seats.
Every SaaS moat was built for a world where the seat was the atomic billing unit.
In IGRS, the seat is gone.
The agent is the atomic unit,
and the moats have to be rebuilt from scratch around it.
Three sequential inversions define the transition, and understanding them is prerequisite to understanding what defensibility looks like inside the shift.
The operator inversion. The agent, not the human, operates the workflow.
The billing unit stops tracking headcount and starts tracking agent activity.
Most enterprise software companies have completed this inversion architecturally by mid-2026, even if they have not repriced.
The buyer inversion.
The person authorizing the purchase is the executive who owns the outcome, the CRO, the COO, the general counsel, not the IT function that owns the tool stack.
Procurement, budget line items, and the sales motion all rearrange.
Most vendors are still mid-flight on this one.
The margin inversion.
Gross margin structure shifts from software plus support, high fixed margin, low variable cost to consumption minus inference variable margin dominated by token cost.
The P&L reshapes.
This inversion is deferred at most incumbents through mechanisms like internal absorption, customer zero, buybacks, and reclassification, but it becomes visible once consumption revenue scales past the threshold from SaaS to IGRS.
The full cascade March 2026 mapped the underlying value layer inversion value migrating from the interface layer, where SaaS captured it, down to the substrate layer, where IGRS captures it, and the five-layer cascade disinversion produces across the NTIP.
RISE software stack. The IGRS transition is what these three inversions look like when they run through the enterprise software category. It has a canonical form, and its canonical form has been mapped in the prior work of this analytical arc. Follow me on the AI supercycle as well.
It also established the three canonical IGRS pricing models: outcome-based, consumption-based, and hybrid. The full frictions of IGRS April 2026 mapped the frictions that slow the transition: financial, operational, competitive, commercial, and why they multiply rather than add.
The Tel Salesforce Q1 FY27 May 2026 used the largest pure enterprise software incumbent as an instrument to locate where the transition actually sits.
The verdict: architecturally migrating, mechanically still SaaS.
Operator inverted, buyer not, margin deferred.
The four intelligence moats, June 2026, the direct parent to this piece, mapped how the entire AI stack builds defensibility across paradigms: corpus, verifier, harness, container.
That piece established the machine side moat map.
This piece completes the arc by mapping defensibility inside the transition itself. If old SaaS moats no longer apply and machine side moats alone are not sufficient, what moats does an IGRS company actually build?
The answer is 6-3 inherited from the machine side: verifier, harness, container. 3 new to the buy relationship: trust, integration, feedback.
Together they define what IGRS defensibility looks like once the transition matures.
They also determine, mechanically, which of the three the IGRS pricing models a company can actually charge. A link the closing section of this piece will make explicit. The order in which the six moats are built matters more than the number of them. They are not parallel. They are serial. Each one unlocks the next.
A company that tries to build them out of order finds itself with moats that do not compound, and more consequentially, with pricing power that stalls at whichever inversion its missing moat was gating.
Up next,
third from Aneconomicon.
Introducing Misery Marches.
This summer, I will be leading the first Misery March in the Greater Toronto / Ontario Area TBA. Join the Aneconomicon Discord server. Toronto, for those of you who have never been, is one of the most gorgeous, walkable, safe, pleasant, dense urban cities in the world, and North America in particular.
The Old City of Toronto, or Old Toronto, is an amazing old Victorian grid city comprised of almost 100 villages, towns, and neighborhoods that all slowly merged together but all kept their individual quirks.
One is even technically an independent republic of 200 people, that the federal government accidentally recognized its independence when their mean protest became a feel-good story 50 years ago. They still pay taxes.
The whole old city is 16 miles wide and is sort of a blend of New York and London, but without the knife, gun, or youth crime.
And many lovely hiking trails that wind throughout the city's 100-plus-mile ravine network.
Pleasant summer hikes and walks and groups to walk abound.
You can find gorgeous trails and people to hike those trails or city tours anywhere, and Margaret and her friends aren't forming a cohesive high-trust super-fit unit off of it. And into the nightmare of the unwalkable, concrete mega-city hellscape sprawled beyond Etobicoke, Scarborough, and the Thornton One, where they shove the airports and the industry and the housing projects for all the recent immigrants, where the street signs themselves have been known to stop using the Latin alphabet.
Instead, we're going to take subways, streetcars, and buses populated by the strangest, smelliest Star Wars cantina creatures. Away from that, we're going outside Old Toronto, outside Metro Toronto, outside the leafy, lovely expanses of endless walkability.
The deadlands beyond Willowdale that Rush described in The Necromancer. In high summer.
In Ontario humidity.
On concrete heat islands that will cook an egg. And we're going to walk 30 km 20 miles. 6-9 hours in that scorching concrete hell, where legend tells of second-generation old Indian men who have never seen a white face.
Drive 1 hour outside Vancouver or Montreal, and you're in the mountains.
Drive 1 hour outside Toronto.
We're going into the heart of darkness, at the worst, most miserable time of year to do so, into lands often described as Mumbai or New Delphi or bigger, hotter, Syria, where all the worst trends of suburbanism, mass migration, urbanism, boomerism, sprawl, and post-war mistakes all intersect. Tear into Baradur-like eyes of pure blighted suburban madness such as Square One or Brampton Shoppers World or Woodbine Mall and Fantasy Fair or Vaughan Mills or First Markham Place or the University of Toronto Scarborough or the Pickering Casino Resort. There's actually a non-zero chance. One of us could die or be driven to madness of heat stroke, violence, mistrust in a corner store, the parasitic macromillipedes, or other complications. 20 miles in the midday sun.
And you're in Toronto.
Rain or shine.
Back to civilization and the leafy green bubble of inner Toronto the hard way.
But why?
The rules of a misery march are simple.
You and your comrades use Google Maps to scab out and hunt down the most miserable, blighted, sprawled out, industrial parked, almost unreachable segment of your metro area.
The part no one you have ever met has ever been in using public transit, skateboards, Uber, taxi, your mum, etc. to get there.
Then you walk back 10-20 miles to the city core or whatever you consider civilization across 6-9 hours.
Depending on the metro area and local laws, you may want to be armed.
But for Toronto purposes, this is unnecessary. Toronto's lost shades and Silent Hill-esque monsters are nothing if not cowardly.
If anyone has to tap out partway for heatstroke, blisters, or for fear that the sadness will consume the mother, wife nags them to get home after a few hours, we don't hold it against them.
They did the important thing.
And then,
force from Michael Peck.
Write a post-mortem on the Blip 2.0 at Anthropic.
RIRTZ#1140 is now officially 3 weeks since the lifting of Anthropic's June 12 Blip 2.0 last week by the US government. Named as such by me after the Blip 1.0 3 years ago, when Opener as non-profit board fired and rehired founder/CEO Sam Altman over a globally stressful weekend.
Both times an interruption in the AI tech wave that was startlingly searing.
With lots of unintended consequences still being felt today from the Blip 1.0. And as I discussed last week, this second one is not yet completely behind us.
Especially with the US government still gating both Anthropic and OpenAI on its latest next generations of frontier AI models.
So it's helpful to see what the latest post-mortem analysis on how it all went down reveals. AxiOS goes through it all and how the world's top AI models were revived. The fight that scrubbed the world's most powerful AI models from the internet featured personality clashes, industry confusion, and international backlash.
What matters, Anthropic's models are back online, but the impact of its 20-day showdown with the Trump administration will be long-lasting.
Behind the scenes, it began when Amazon's Anthropic's partner and investor sounded an alarm that was later disputed by
why cybersecurity experts.
It warned about a jailbreaking issue it found with their AI lab's latest models, Mythos and Fable, meaning a technical flaw that could have caused a failure of their guardrails. Amazon flagged its concerns to the administration, triggering sweeping export controls.
A US official said the government conducted its own tests once it became apparent that the issue needed to be addressed.
Cybersecurity experts, however, later wrote in an open letter to the administration that other leading AI models have the same issue Amazon warned about with Anthropic.
Then the Friday evening events that set it all off with a call from Lutnick on June 12th, Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick, at the direction of President Trump, called Anthropic CEO Dario Amodei.
Lutnick made clear to Amodei the issue needed to be resolved fast and alerted the CEO that THE
company would be receiving a letter imposing sweeping export controls, the US official said. Amodei called Lutnick back that night after receiving the letter, realizing it effectively meant the models would have to be taken offline too, which Lutnick responded that was indeed the goal.
So klar.
Rittier last at that point on the near-term objective. According to a US official, the company wanted to prove everything was already resolved and further changes were being fine-tuned.
But the Federal Center for AI Standards and Innovation and the National Security Agency said those changes weren't good enough, prompting further fixes, according to
the US official. Gradually, various agency heads approved of the changes, and on July 1 the models were released, the official said.
These are the government hard at work indeed.
Out of all of the administration officials, Amazon's Andy Jassy could have called, it was Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent who first heard about the jailbreaking issue found in a company report, according to a separate source familiar.
Bessent was early to sound the alarm on Mythos' work with
White House Chief of Staff Susie Wiles to re-engage the embattled company and help get a cybersecurity executive order across the finish line.
While technical discussions to address the jailbreaking issue took place in DC, it was Bessent who stood next to Trump during the G7, where allies call for
our global cooperation on safety standards.
Nature abhors a vacuum, as they say.
Specifically Mythos from Anthropic and GPT-5.6 from OpenAI.
Regardless of broader consequences for the US or AI race vs China,
that decision led to a three-week, multi-agency crash course in AI safety.
Anthropic deployed engineers to Washington, D.C.
At the center of the showdown was Lutnick, who also flanked Trump at the G7 meeting, while his department's teams led technical discussions. National Cyber Director Sean Cairncross, the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy, Treasury Department Chief Information Officer Sam Corkosian, DDNSA also all participated in technical discussions, according to various sources.
Washington mobilized FASTA to hold scores of meetings and pulled in far more agencies than one would expect for a single technical issue, one source said. Then it all gilt from there, continuing over to the G7 meeting in Europe, with Anthropic founder/CEO Dario Amodei in attendance. And the departure of AI and crypto czar David Sacks in recent days left Secretary Lutnick at the AI helm, steering the US ship,
and meeting briefly with President Trump. The tension spiraled amid personality clashes and poor communication. Anthropic eventually understood that in order to be successful, it needed to be on the same side as the government, the US.
Next, fifth from Coffee Talk with Yellow Brick Home. What if we walked away?
Asterisk tap 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 asterisk hi hello, is this thing on?
It became apparent as I fumbled through the settings on my screen that I've stepped away from my laptop for quite some time.
This summer was meant to be a brain break, an overdue reprieve, a chance to clear my head and, well, step back from social media and reassess what's most important.
Up next.
Sixth from Coffee Talk with Yellow Brick Home.
Why we foster a backstory. This week, we brought home a new foster dog.
Meet Indy.
She's an adorable, goofy, curious, very good girl from the Chicago-based rescue we regularly work with, one tail at a time.
Coming in at 70-plus pounds, she's also the largest dog we've ever invited into our home.
Indy is all edge with the most kissable face, and I often jump scare myself when I catch her out of the corner of my eye thinking she's a whole dang human walking into the room.
Indy is the fifth pup we've fostered through one tail, and she won't be the last. I already know she's going to make her future family very, very happy. And then, seventh from Coffee Talk with Yellow Brick Home.
My experience starting HRT.
I imagine you'll be postmenopausal before you're 50.
I had just finished going over my symptoms and backstory with my hormone doctor.
I let her know that physically, I feel great.
The best I've felt in my entire adult life.
I told her about the shifts I noticed in my health starting in my mid-30s.
Next, eighth from Coffee Talk with Yellow Brick Home.
A transition to Ford de glorifying the idea of business. The last few posts have been pretty heavy topics, so I'd like to lighten things up this time.
I always feel a wave of relief on the first day of fall, like, okay, we can officially snuggle into our sofas guilt-free.
It feels like permission to settle into a more quiet routine and whipping up heartier family favorite recipes.
And most importantly, let the Halloween costume brainstorming commence.
It's the time of year where we stick to a 9-5 workday, help Lucy with homework while one of us cooks dinner, and we end the day with pajamas and an hour of colouring crafts or something creative.
Up next, ninth from Coffee Talk with Yellow Brick Home.
Do you decorate your home for Halloween?
Aside from the college day Halloween parties, where we dress to the nines in our pull-together thrifted costumes only to consume foamy beer from kegs while house-hopping and trying to grab the attention of a crusher, I digress, we've never been ones to lean into this holiday. And it wasn't until Lucy was three that she began questioning why other houses were covered in spiderwebs and inflatable ghosts. The following year, she helped us throw synthetic cobwebs onto our front gate. This is the same year I learned I despise the stretchy, messy fluff.
And then,
10th from Coffee Talk with Yellow Brick Home. This is not the Chicago I know.
This is not about any Chicago you've seen in the news lately.
It's not about middle-of-the-night raids on apartment buildings, clouds of tear gas thrown by ICE at the end of my street, or racial profiling paired with lack of due process. It's not about the careless detaining of my ward's older person, a horrific intimidation of masked and armed officials roaming my neighborhood playgrounds, grocery stores and hospitals, or the inhumane way I see our neighbors being torn from their children. This is not about the withholding of funds for Chicago public schools out of spite and the emails IFR. That's it for today. Tomorrow morning, whatever the night brings.
Stay curious.